With me in the KRVS studios this afternoon are Sam Brannon, who works with the Veterans Upward Bound program here on the UL Lafayette campus, and Ken Carmouche, who is a veteran of the Veterans Upward Bound program, participated in the Veterans Upward Bound program, and is now a student here at the university, taking regular courses in a degree program. And Sam is here to talk about the free courses that Veterans Upward Bound offers to veterans, and in hopes that they will continue as Ken has. So we're going to talk about some specifics in ways people can get involved in the Veterans Upward Bound program, and then we're going to talk with Ken about your particular experiences and what you're doing here at the university now. So Sam, I know you've been on a few times over the years and talking about Veterans Upward Bound, but there are a lot of people who may not know what Veterans Upward Bound is and why it's here at the university. So how did it get started?
Well, in 1989, there was a grant written. It's a federal grant written for this program that had been around, you know, for years. And Mr. Robert Carmouche had put the grant in, and it was accepted in 1989. It's not through the VA. It's the Department of Education out of Washington, D.C., for veterans that we've tried to help them take different classes to help them to get motivated, actually to do, help them motivate like Ken, to help them to go to the college of their choice, and hopefully they would go to UL.
Mm-hmm. So they could attend any institute of higher learning, whether that's a community college,
well, kind of
a four-year university. You know, well, of course, we are here. So these classes that you're offering free are not credit classes. They're not for credit.
No.
So you don't need to be afraid that you're going to ruin a GPA or anything. These courses are to help people who are interested in attending some institution of higher learning.
Mm-hmm.
So what courses do you all offer?
Well, we have the computer class, which everybody really enjoys, and that's on Monday night. And then, like tonight, we'll have the English and the Spanish. And then on Wednesday nights, we have the math and French. And Thursdays, we'll have the science and the internet. And they all start at 5:30. They're a couple of hours, and they're absolutely free.
And these are basic classes
right.
that mirror the basic classes you would have to take when you start in a college program.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So kind of introductory classes. You did indicate that they have started, but people can still register for the
right.
classes.
They started actually yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's never too late to enter our classes. We have an open enrollment. You know, you can come anytime, and we'd be glad to have you.
All right. And again, we're going to keep stressing
right.
that these are free classes.
Right.
And what do you need to do in order to register mm-hmm. for the classes?
Yeah, they're in the classes are in FG Mouton, which is right behind Martin Hall. The only thing you need to do is just give us a call at 482-5819, or you can call my number, 482-5818, and you need to fill out some paperwork. And the main thing you need to do is bring a copy of your DD Form 214. All veterans know what that is. It just proves you're a veteran, how much time you were in, and what kind of discharge did you have.
And they may wonder, how much time do you have to have?
Six months. 180 days.
All right. Mm-hmm. And you just need proof of that.
Right, yes,
and
ma'am.
Then you can sign up for
mm-hmm.
these classes.
Glad to have you.
I believe the Veterans Upward Bound number may be a part of the university's website. So if you go to that website, you could find it, or just type in Veterans Upward Bound Lafayette, and I'm sure that would get you the contact information. Because I know a lot of people aren't writing down the number as we say it. So if you're listening and you or somebody you know who is a veteran may be interested in these free courses, you can just search for it, or we'll have the number here at
KRVS
as well.
Sure, you'll have the
number. So lots of ways to find that number in order to search out those free classes. Well, Ken Carmouche, again, as we said, is I don't know if you call them graduates, but you did take these courses at one point. And I know that years ago you may have been at UL, but you were away for a long time.
I did. Back in 1981, I came here after graduating from Acadiana High here, and I majored in English journalism. But being young and naive and immature, I took a different path than the righteous path and wound up dropping out after 2.5 years. I promised my dad, who's been deceased for 16 years, that I would return back to college. And after retiring in 07, my wife and I was confronted with grandkids, and we wanted to help our daughter have a more meaningful life, a better change, more opportunities for herself. So we decided in mutual agreement with her to adopt her two children. And that's what motivated me to come back and making good of the promise that I had with my father. The only problem was I was out of school for 27 years, and I wasn't a first-class student back in 81, and, you know, you only go with what you know to exist, and I wasn't a good student, but I had a willingness and a wanting to go back, but that wasn't enough. So I ran into Sam one day at the Veterans Clinic here on Pinhook and decided to enroll in the program and took about two classes, which was math and computer literacy. And from there, I started seeing a way that I could re-enter into college. And the program was so beneficial for me, I learned a lot and decided to enter into college. And one thing I'll tell you about the courses that are classes is that they can build a strong foundation for you. Because when I came into UL, I had a decision to make whether to declare academic amnesty or just to continue on where I left off 27 years ago, and I took the latter. And I didn't want to go back to remedial. And that's a big risk. But Veteran Upper Bound helped me so tremendously. I was able to go back to school, take Math 105, and I came out with a B. And that really, really encouraged me. I said to my wife, if I can make a B in math, I could become a college student.
Well, let's talk about that, because the two courses you mentioned are probably two of the reasons that many people fear to go back to college, math and computers, because, as you said, you were back at the university in 81, but so much had changed.
Exactly.
Everything is done by computers. And is that a real barrier to a lot of people who have perhaps been in the armed forces and they're thinking about coming back, but it's been a while, that computer science and that math? That really is a stumbling block for a lot of people.
I think so. It's one of those forbidden walls that you just don't approach. You know, you may give a bunch of excuses. My age, I'm from a different time, or, you know, it's just not for me. But with Veteran Upper Bound, they break down a wall such as that.
So describe a class for us. If there's someone listening who's thinking, maybe I'll take it, but they're still a little nervous, what happens in those classes?
Well, they start you from the very beginning. They take you from a point where you just don't know. And they give you some history, and they just start, for example, Math 105. You start with addition and subtraction, and computer literacy. You know, you learn the keyboard, and is what helped me in computer literacy was it was very close to the old typewriter. It was set up that way, so I was winning that in that way. But with persistence and consistency, anything is possible if you have a willing mind to do it.
Well, it sounds like the courses and I'm sure the teachers are all designed to make the veterans feel much more comfortable with those subjects, that they're not such a mysterious subject and that you can do it. There are elements about it that are very doable for you.
I would agree with that, because carrying the burden of, you know, I got to do it all on my own might be an unwanted hardship. But the teachers, they come to class with that mindset that they're there to help you better yourself academically. And they give it their all. And if you show up and you're just halfway, if the cup is half full, you will make it. You will make it without any doubt. You just have to keep coming and keep wanting and keep dreaming.
So you took courses with Veterans Upward Bound, and that inspired you to actually go back to college and to take classes for credit.
Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm. I call it killing two birds with one stone. My dad been deceased for 16 years, and I made a promise that I would go back, and my grandkids. So what I'm living and I'm traveling on a road, taking a journey to accomplish these two things. And better yet, even more so personally, I get another opportunity to experience another career in life. And I'm looking forward to doing that. Mm-hmm. At 50.
So at 50, you're a junior at the University of Louisiana at Lafayette.
Yes,
and,
ma'am.
The springboard of Veterans Upward Bound really helped you get back into those courses. So what are you studying right now?
Economics.
Right. So that math obviously has not been an impediment to you at all.
Well, I've had my challenges, mm-hmm. but I understand that other students have their challenges too, and nothing good come easy. So I wanted so bad I could feel the degree in my hand every day I walk these sidewalks here at UL. But I would say that, you know, just coming here has been a total new venture, new experience for me that I never thought I'd ever be walking mm-hmm. these sidewalks ever again.
Well, tell us about that, because I think in addition to courses like math and computers, for many veterans, just coming back to college and being in that situation is it's a bit frightening for some of them because they feel apart from many of the other students. They're not traditional students. It may be years and years since they've been to school. So did Veterans Upward Bound help with that transition for you coming back to campus?
Definitely. That is something I experienced very early on, you know, being 30-something years older than the average student here. It was all right studying, going to classes, but you quickly realize that you're the oldest person. And so for some of these classes, I'm older than the professors. So
you've had different experiences in life.
And definitely. Mm-hmm. And you bring that to the table, and that's where I would say Veteran Upward Bound reached further out into the veteran's life after the Veteran Upward Bound program. They continue to hold on to you. They ride that train with you throughout your the process of that. And they are the advisors and the faculty will constantly check upon you, and you can go to them and tell them the problems of the experiences you have and that there may be a problem in the future, and they're able to assist you and advise you and motivate you. And there's a couple people in the program that went back to school like I'm doing in their 40s. So I'm like, if you haven't, you know, walked in my shoes, and you don't know what I'm talking about, but there's people in the program that have walked in my shoes. So it's easy to follow their instructions and be built up by their encouragement. And that's what I appreciate, that arm that extends beyond the program. Because after taking these classes and you become a student, that's pretty much all that you can do in the Veterans Upper Bound as far as classes. But they keep the friendship, they keep the connection, and it's good when you have someone that you're familiar with, someone who's been there from the very beginning to continue to be with you throughout your educational process for yourself.
So there are advisors there who can help you and direct you. Perhaps if you need tutoring, they can direct you in the where you need to go. So a really great resource for you once you do get into your college classes.
Exactly. For example, in math, when I first started, I went to SLCC. That was pretty much the place I said, if I pass this class, I'll go back to college. Well, what I was doing here, being that I was in the Veteran Upward Bound program, I'd come here and use the tutoring service in the morning before class. Then I'd go to class around 11 at SLCC, and then I'd come right back here and get tutoring for the homework that I just learned. So I was constantly getting tutoring throughout, you know, that summer session, which allowed me to comprehend it and grasp the material even better than just being a student at SLCC, which UL provide far more tutoring than they do.
So you're getting a lot of reinforcements from Veterans Upward Bound and taking advantage of what they offered, the resources they offered. If you are just tuning in, my guests are Sam Brannon, who is with the Veterans Upward Bound program here at UL Lafayette, and Ken Carmouche, who took the classes through Veterans Upward Bound and has maintained his ties and been greatly supported by the Veterans Upward Bound program, even as he is a student, a full student at the university, studying economics right now. And how do your grandchildren respond to this, you being a student?
Well, they're very young, but they do realize that their granddad is in school like they are. And I don't think they understand the
fully
reason.
Yet.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
But one day they will, and that's my ace in the hole. So that they will be able to, you know, achieve what I'm trying to achieve, that they'll be encouraged to do so. I'll keep, once I get the degree, I'm going to keep telling the story, and I'm going to tell them how and who was responsible for helping me.
And speaking of degrees, supposed to be getting it next fall, not in 2014.
Exactly.
Well, we'll have you back on when you get your degree. And
thank you.
You can continue telling us about your experience here. But veterans right now with 6 months active service, Sam, can take advantage of what Ken is talking about, those courses that he took that really inspired him to jump back into college. And those courses are being offered right now. If you could tell us again the courses and how people can sign up for them.
Courses are computer literacy, English, Spanish, math, French, science, and the Internet. And they're in the evenings at FG Mutual starting at 5:30. Absolutely free to veterans only.
Okay, so we can't stress that enough. They are free courses. They're not for credit, so you don't need to worry about your record. These are practice classes and a way to get involved with Veterans Upward Bound, and they can be a source of support and inspiration, as they have been for Ken in his college career as well. So it's open enrollment now. Contact the Veterans Upward Bound program. If you're a veteran, if you know anyone who is, who's kind of thinking about maybe getting back to school, this is a great way to get back into it, and obviously it's been a wonderful experience for Ken Carmouche, and we appreciate y'all coming by to tell us more about it, Ken. Again, we really would like to have you back when you finish that degree, and you can be an inspiration to more people, more veterans, to participate in the Veterans Upward Bound program. And you all are very proud because your grant has been renewed for, I guess, five more years.
It was renewed last summer, so we're fixing to finish our first year.
Right, so many more years left to help and support veterans in our community. Free classes, a range of courses. If you have questions, if you want to register, please contact their office here on the UL Lafayette campus. Again, Sam Brannon with Veterans Upward Bound, and Ken Carmouche, now a student at the university, went through the Veterans Upward Bound courses. Thank you both.
Thank you, Judith.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And joining me in the KRVS studios is Cooper Helm. He is directing Ira Levin's Death Trap. It's opening this week. And I was laughing because I was thinking about what we're about to talk about. That music was so creepily perky.
Yeah.
It's like when you hear that music in a horror film, you know something really bad is going to happen. And Death Trap has elements of horror in it. I just want to mention to people who may not know Ira Levin that we know his novels. Even if you may not know him as a playwright, he wrote Rosemary's Baby. Mm-hmm. He wrote The Boys from Brazil. He wrote The Stepford Wives and Kiss Before Dying, which was made into a movie twice. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, he has this play, Death Trap, which was made into a movie.
Right.
Michael Caine, I believe, was in it.
And Christopher Reeve.
Christopher Reeve. And his first play was No Time for Sergeants, which became, you know, spun off into the Andy Griffith series. And, you know, we know all about that. But that was his first produced play. So Death Trap has some really interesting elements of all of his interests. And when you read about him, some of the most famous writers of suspense and crime novels and horror novels love him, including Stephen King.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Cooper, how did you come across this play? Have you seen it performed before?
No, I have not.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And what inspired you to produce it?
We had done a couple of plays over the past 6 months, Barry mm-hmm. Child.
Very well received.
And At Home at the Zoo, mm-hmm. thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, we booked a few more slots over here at Cité des Arts. And so we booked the slots, and now we have to pick a play.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
doing research, we wanted to do one that, you know, Lafayette and the audience would really, really enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of went down the list of famous plays, Broadway plays, and I kind of do that, Tony Award-winning plays, difficult plays, plays that require really, really good acting, and plays that we can, you know, make them as spectacular as possible. And Death Trap was up there as the record holder for longest comedy thriller.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
4 years, 1,800 performances.
And so obviously something just within the body of the play is attracting people that really keeps them there and coming back to see
mm-hmm.
the play. So
yeah.
Something just inherent in the writing of the play. Now, I just want to talk a bit about your history. You mentioned a couple other plays that you've done, Barry Child mm-hmm. and At Home at the Zoo. Both extremely intense American plays.
Yes.
Very much a part of something in American culture. Each mm-hmm. of those plays is addressing something different.
Mm-hmm.
But this seems to have a certain element as well
mm-hmm.
That is very American, that crime novel, crime play.
Yeah.
Americans are fascinated by it. And obviously other people in the world are too.
Right.
But we're particularly fascinated by it. Stephen King and all of the film noir mm-hmm. writers from the 20s on up, very interesting American genre.
Yeah, it's yeah. like, you know, we're fascinated with murder. Everybody is. I mean, I don't want to say everybody, but
and mysteries and thrills and intrigue in addition to murder.
And, you know, we're always – people are interested in the trials, all the trials that go on, well, you know, afterwards, you know, O.J., Joey Arias, mm-hmm. whatever. And, you know, this is the mindset of the people possibly that commit these crimes.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
this is actually what goes on. You know, we never know what the – you know, what the murder does and
right.
what leads up to it. So here's a story of – all that and right. twist and turns and plot turns and twist. It's just all over the place.
Okay. Well, let's talk about these twists and plots. And I wish everyone had the opportunity to see the poster that you all made. Death
mm-hmm.
Trap is written. All of the letters are made out of some horrific
yeah.
weapon
yeah,
that creates.
It's really nice. We had an artist, Erin Broussard.
Mm-hmm.
She drew this. And, I mean, it's quite amazing. We had the idea. And it took her a couple of – well, I mean, I want to say about a month and a half. But, mm-hmm. I mean, but it was difficult to come up with this and to draw it so precise and perfect. And it's great. We love it.
Yeah, it's wonderful. The D, just to give you a sense of it, is made out of a crossbow, a drawn crossbow. Mm-hmm. And it goes on from there. So Death Trap, it's two acts, so you have to get in all that thrill and suspense and potential murder into two acts. Yes. I know you're very pleased with your cast.
I am.
Maybe you can mention them before we start talking about what they do.
Okay. I'll start off with Lauren Green-White. She plays Helga Tendorp, who is staying at a cottage, down the way. She's over there relaxing or whatever. She's a psychic, and she has visions of possible murders here and possible murders there. She's got an appearance on the Merv Griffin show, so she's got to let everybody know how great she is and how much of a psychic she is. I mean, she's the Diane Warwick of her time. So that's Helga Tendorp. Now, also we have Jack Sorensen, who plays Porter Milgram, who is the family lawyer. And he comes to speak of the will and find out how his good friend's doing as well. So he has a part, that just comes in. But he's key in seeing something when he's in there that allows the plot to develop even more. I mean, there's, I would say, four or five plot twists to it. So it's one of those things. Mm-hmm. It's good. Then we have Hope Garrett Cook, who is Myra Brule, who is Sydney Brule's wife. And she is, she's a loving wife that would do anything for her husband, possibly, kill for it. Who knows? I mean, I don't want to give anything away. But, she's a good, kind-hearted person. And she's kind of been we haven't really talked about the storyline a little bit. But, he's a successful he was a successful playwright, her husband. And he's had a bunch of flops. So he hadn't been making any money. So she's got to, carry the weight there. Okay. So that's the wife, Myra Brule. Sorry. And then Wilton Zenon is playing Clifford Anderson, the role played by Christopher Reeve. And he's the young playwright who has this has an idea, a script, and he sends it to the older playwright, who I'm going to talk about in a second. And he's got this play he wrote, and it's called Death Trap. And Sydney Brule, I'll just get into it. He gets it in the mail, and he's sitting in his desk in his study, and he gets this play, and it's a can't miss, surefire hit that'll run for years and years and years, and the kid's going to make money off of it, and all this. So it just infuriates Sydney Brule, and because it's not him that's going to get rich, it's somebody else.
Well, asking about the actors actually gave us a really nice sketch of how this play is set up.
I was going to try to run that down in a minute. Go ahead.
What's very interesting when you hear the elements of a story like this, whether it's a novel or a play, the elements all seem a bit simple on the surface, and they seem almost caricaturish, that we know these people.
Yes.
Every, noir novel that we've read has somebody like that. Mm-hmm. So how the story is structured and what you do with the characters is really what creates a genius of a play like Death Trap.
Indeed.
So, let's talk about these characters and I guess just sketch the plot. They got kind of an idea of it from these characters, but just set the scene as what you want people to know as the curtain opens.
Yeah, you really can't tell too much about the play without giving it away, because from the get-go, it's you're thinking one thing and it could be another. Yeah. So I'll just kind of give you a little rundown. Mm-hmm. Sydney Brule is a famous playwright who had a few good plays on Broadway, Murder Game being his most famous. But over the last 18 years, he hasn't had any success whatsoever. He's had four flops, and, like I said, he's out of money, and he's living off his wife's money. So the play opens, and he's in his study, which is a room that's it's an old stable house converted, and it's just full of all kind of weapons, medieval weapons, swords, battle axes, maces, guns, the whole nine yards. You know, it's, I mean, it's just got everything that you could imagine in it. And anyway, he's sitting in his desk and at his desk, and he's reading a letter from the student, Clifford Anderson, about the play he's written, Death Trap. And he's, you know, asking for his opinion. Well, this makes Sidney Brule famous. Why? Because the play Death Trap, it's a can't miss. It's, you know, and someone other than him's going to reap the benefits from it and get rich from it. And now he's thinking, well, maybe if I bring the guy over, then and I have the original copy, and he doesn't have any other copies because this is set in 1975, and they didn't have, I mean, they had Xerox machines, but I mean, it was a process, so everybody still had the old typewriters with, and he only had one carbon. He's making sure. So he invites him over and asks him to you know, collaborate with him. His wife actually says, Sidney, you know, would you really kill, you know, for to be successful? And he's like, well, yeah, but, you know, he's joking. Or is he joking? You know, so his wife convinces him to collaborate with the young student, and they can share the rights and all the fame and everything like that. So that's what happens.
Right. That's and what sets it up.
That sets the stage. And from there on, you're just kind of guessing, and you never know. And
well, I want to tell people who are just tuning in and sort of trying to do a flow chart of what you've just my guest is Cooper Helm. He is directing Death Trap, which is a play by Ira Levin. Again, very well known for many of his novels, including Rosemary's Baby, The Boys from Brazil. It seems like everything he wrote was made into a movie. Very well-known movies and very well-known actors acting in them.
Yes.
Stephen King called Ira Levin the Swiss watchmaker of suspense.
Boom, 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 boom.
I know. You want to hear the music coming? So, you know, there are watches and there are watches and there are plays and there are plays. But it's what you do with the components and how finely those components mesh together. So as director, give us a sense of what goes into making this play a successful play. Well, what, I mean, you've directed lots of plays. What is it about the characters and the action and the dialogue? And what do you have to do to actually make it all come alive?
Well, they're pretty much basic stereotype people. Mm-hmm. Faithful wife, you know.
Blocked writer.
Blocked writer. I don't know where I was going with that. But, you know, student. It's just you have these real characters that are eccentric. And there's a certain element of realism in each one of these characters that each person that, you know, human being can identify with. Ira Levin is very good at connecting with the human soul. So he writes these characters and they're very real. And it's very easy to make these characters super big and super over the top and be all make them caricatures, but they're not. Mm-hmm. They're real people with real issues. I guess, you know, you have the greedy person, the faithful person, the aspiring person, you know, the psychic, you know, and then your lawyer, you know. They're just all your day-to-day real people, writer. And so and to bring that out, to make this a good play, you have to bring out that realism and stay in the confines of who these people are, because all the writing is very natural. So the comedy in it is very natural. So if you try to play it up here and play the comedy up, it's just not funny. So you have to stay within the confines of the actual script and the meaning behind them, and know that this meaning is real and not just some, I guess, fluffy, it just doesn't go into an aimless direction.
Well, I know that you're a meticulous director, and the past few times I've had you on to talk about what you've been doing, it's fascinating to hear everything you do to ensure that a play goes well. You're thoughtful about every single detail that goes into the play. And you were saying earlier before we went on that as this production has gone on and you've worked on it more, it's become a more complex, more intricate production.
Yeah. Well, like I said, we just picked it because it was popular and good and ran for years. And we thought that, you know, the public would love to see it. So come on out and see it. Mm-hmm. But another question again?
Well, just that it's, as you said, as obviously, yes, you picked it because it was going to be a great play for people to come and see.
Oh, yeah.
But as you've gotten into it.
So we got the script and there's like 200 props. There's all these battle. Mm-hmm. I mean, all the weapons, and it's all this. Well, you have to get this, and you have to get that. But it's a type of play, though. It can be done on a smaller scale. You can cut a lot of stuff out of it, and it becomes
more simplistic.
You know, you can do it, but that's just not the way I operate, or we operate, Scott and I, and we don't scale back.
So you've chosen to use all 200 weapons.
Well, I mean, we're filling our walls. Our walls will be full, you know, but we're not going to use everything. You just can't. I mean, you can get your hands on it, but I mean, there's literally, you know, 300 set pieces in the actual production, but we couldn't fit that many on our stage. This, you know, it was, when it ran on Broadway, it's a lot bigger stage.
So Levin actually specifies all of these in
well,
the play.
I mean, there's choice ones used, so you're not going to use them all.
Right.
I mean, but it's the decor. Mm-hmm. But from a technical aspect too, it gets a little hairy when you're dealing with all those weapons, and then there's nice light cues and sound cues. There's wind, there's rain, there's lightning, thunder.
All the things that create suspense.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's everything wrapped up into one. He took every single genre of horror, drama, comedy, and just kind of wrapped it all up into one play. And that's difficult to pull out, actually. And I found we had a 7-week, six to seven, somewhere, rehearsal schedule 4 times a week. But then, I mean, we've added, you know, an hour here, an hour there, a couple of rehearsals, and pretty much have gone straight through since last Wednesday without a break. So it's because it just becomes that much more of a mammoth play. Each rehearsal, it's like, wow, we could get it here, you know? And then it's, you know, we just don't like to settle for anything. I mean, we just trying to really make the best product possible.
Well, without giving anything away, can you give an example of that? Something that you've taken to the extreme or the just
at
an
home
example
at the zoo? And
in this play.
Oh.
In this play in particular, something to do with a prop or a setting or a special effect or.
Well, you really don't want to give anything away.
Maybe I know you want to give it away.
You know?
Well, some of the things you've mentioned already, just the sounds must take so much effort. Who do you have helping you with the tech?
Scott Grimial. He's my assistant. We actually started the Lauren Riley Elliott Theater and Film Company, and he's my right-hand man in this, and it's really well, I don't want to say it's just he and I, but he and I are the ones that get together and talk about this stuff.
Mm-hmm. How to make better thunder.
And started doing this about a year, a little over a year ago. And so he's over there at the theater right now painting and working on stuff. But he also is the producer. And but, you know, with that, we've had a multitude of so many people. And we did a fundraiser. We had like 14 people contribute money on the fundraiser. We've had support outside of that too, with lots of businesses, Sir Speedy, Habitat for Humanity. As far as with Christy Litke and Cité de Arts and her husband Jim, they've just, you know, been super with us over the past year. And so then Sharon Connors, who is our she's done our props. She's got our props and helped us with costumes and things. I mean, and then Aaron Broussard, who did the poster, who's also our stage manager. So, yeah, we've got our list of people to thank, and our gratitude towards them is amazing.
That sounds like a lot of commitment.
We're amazed by them.
Yeah. It's a lot of commitment and passion that's been going into this play. Well, I'm sure some people are curious as to how you acquired some of these weapons. I mean, she's the props master. Oh, are they all from
a friend,
locally procured?
Well, we had to order some. Mm-hmm. We had to find them, internet search and stuff like that, eBay. We got crossbow from that and a few things that we couldn't find. And then we also had a good friend and local artist, Jody Powell. She came in with all these really, really incredible weapons. The Eunice Players did this production mm-hmm. years ago, so they had a stockpile of them. Thank you, Eunice Players. And we have them for our set now, and it's just, you know, I mean, they're heavy battle axes and sword.
Not paper
mache. They're 4.5 foot sword, Excalibur swords, you know, with skulls and you name it. I mean, the set's going to shine.
So in this play, that makes a big difference, those kinds of details.
Yes, mm-hmm. And it is. You know, I mean, each play's got its own thing, but I don't need any pictures of family in this room. You know,
pictures of family.
I mean, it's all death and murder weapons in this room.
Yeah, there's no mistaking it.
Yeah,
there's no.
But it's a nice. Yeah, it's a nice home, and mm-hmm. you know, he's happy. I want to say he's happy. But.
Well, so let's. So you've got your set, and who designed the set?
Actually, I gave that privilege to Scott.
Okay.
This is his first design.
Mm-hmm. So he's doing tech and set design.
Yeah, and he's the technical director.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the relationships between the people. You're directing, so you're dealing with these people. And you said kind of an interesting thing earlier about how natural the script is.
Mm-hmm.
Does that pose special challenges rather than a script that could easily be overacted? How do you direct people in a well-written, very natural script?
Well, I mean, you kind of...
I guess you
without
choose really good actors
without
first.
I mean, you do say this, but mm-hmm. I mean, you try to. I mean, it's really, you know, acting is not acting. But it's a lot more complicated than that. I mean, because mm-hmm. it's really simple if you think about it like that, and all you really have to do is sit there and listen, react, and respond. And if you prepare, you'll be fine. But it. Right when you start to read something, it's kind of like you're feeling the emotion, and it's like you've got to give off that emotion to make it look right. But that actually really doesn't work. At least, I mean, it does when you have a. Sometimes there's an element that you do need to kind of have bigger than life gestures and things like that. In a big theater, that's somebody's 100 feet from you, and they've got to read you. This is an intimate theater, and you don't every seat in it is really good, so you don't have to overdo anything in it, and it plays really, really real.
Mm-hmm.
It's basic acting tools a lot of it, and these guys are they're professional about it, and they've been absolutely wonderful. So you just you're just a fly on the wall while all this stuff is happening,
mm-hmm.
and that's what. That's what we go for. That's what our goal is to completely suck you in, take you on a journey, take you on a vacation, and when you walk out, you've just been on a wild roller coaster ride.
You make that sound so simple. And when you talk about yourself being a fly on the wall, I know how hard you work. Your description of what you do and the hours and the thought and the discussion and everything that goes into it. But that is art then, making it at the final product seem like it has been effortless and that it fits together so beautifully.
That's the goal.
Mm-hmm. That's the goal, he says nervously. If you are just tuning in, we're talking about the play Death Trap by Ira Levin. My guest, Cooper Helm, is the director. He is, along with Scott Grimion, putting this play on at Cité des Arts. And you did mention the Lauren Riley Elliott Company.
Yes.
This is a company you've put together
yes.
with some other people for plays and film.
Yes.
Maybe just describe that just a little bit
well,
for people.
Well, yeah, we actually, before we did our first production here in Lafayette, we had thought about it, but we didn't really want to put a name to anything. I mean, it's just when you do that, I don't know. I guess it's just a step. We did At Home at the Zoo, and then we're doing this one here, and it's might as well. Well, if let's put a brand name to it So it's just not directed by Cooper Helm, produced by Scott Grimiaw every time. You know, I mean, then that's a little more complicated. Let's just put a name to it. And that's what we did. Mm. And, you know, we're also, you know, we have a film project on our schedule as well. So, but when you're doing theater, that takes an incredible amount of time. And, you know, if you want it to be good, it's like you really have to put all your focus in that one project for that time that you're doing it. So in our spare time, which is none, we try to come up with some ideas. But in between theater plays, we work on our film projects.
Mm-hmm. And we want to say this is opening at Cité des Arts this yes. week, so you can get your tickets through Cité. Well, you know, when you talk about a brand, just in thinking back over the plays that you've done so far and this mm-hmm. one, the reviews have been fabulous. Comments that I've heard from everyone who has seen your productions, people come away feeling, as you said, that incredible experience that they've just had, that it was an emotional experience. Yes. They were completely drawn into it. And, you know, that is an amazing brand to have, for people to know that when they enter into that space that you're creating,
yes.
That they will feel that.
Yeah. I mean, it's storytelling mm-hmm. and it's just storytelling. And we want so much to tell that story. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's just like any movie you go see, you know, but you know, you can't just reach out and touch the actors on screen, and you're right in here, in the midst, in the action, feeling it. The emotion levels are high. I mean, if you can achieve that success, that's the euphoric feeling we get and the thrill that we get from doing it. And there's a lot of pain, and there's a lot of things along the way that challenges that, you know, that come up that are unforeseen, that are just, you know, mind-boggling. But nothing's ever good if there's no work or pain or effort put behind it. You know, there's always seems to be good things come out of hard experiences.
Well,
good work's not easy.
It definitely creates that effect. It shows in all of your productions.
Oh, thanks.
And another thing, in addition to the work that you all have been doing, it seems that audiences in our community, and don't know how wide that net, I mean, it's casting all over South Louisiana, but people are attending live theater in huge numbers. There have been sellout crowds. And of course, we have these intimate spaces, as you said, Theater 810, Cité des Arts, and people are packing the houses night after night in these productions. And it says so much about that passion and commitment mm-hmm. that all of the theater groups have in this community. People go out expecting quality.
Yes, yes, indeed. And there was a write-up, I think Cody Daigle wrote it up in the Times before the summer started, with the plethora of theater going on in this town. It's amazing. I mean, there's 10 to 15, I don't know what it is, but theater groups that are in the local area, you know, and a few theaters to rent out. And there's always something going on. And so you definitely have the actors in town and the people that want to do it, you know, and they're doing it.
Right.
It's to open up the community mm-hmm. That there's this other option in town, and that's to see some really kick butt theater.
Intense.
Yeah, theater. Intense.
Well,
we go for intense.
We know that you mentioned the Eunice Players a little bit earlier, and I think they just recently celebrated their 45th anniversary.
Wow.
And some other, you know, smaller towns mm-hmm. have Abbeville, mm-hmm. New Iberia. They have their versions of that have been around for decades as well. But there seems to be this critical mass, this intensity all over now, where any week during the year, mm-hmm. there's some play going on.
Yeah.
Or two or three.
Yeah.
So
Lafayette's grown over the past, I guess the mid 80s mm-hmm. after kind of the crash, the oil field a little bit there. But then, I mean, there's 50,000-60,000 more people in the city now than there was. And they're projected to have, you know, I mean, it's going to, you're going to have 250,000 quarter million people in the city in 15 years. prediction, but
well, it's also an amazing critical mass of yeah. artists like yourself, directors, actors, writers, producers, set designers, yes. Who are producing this quality work in our town. We are talking about the play Death Trap by Ira Levin. My guest Cooper Helm is directing the play. It opens this Thursday. How many weekends does it run, Cooper?
Well, this play runs 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. We were really going to open on Thursday night, but we decided to do a preview that night, and we are going to do that preview. It's going to be a donation slash kind of fundraiser for our next project, Dead Man's Cell Phone, which is going to come in August. So we're going to use any money that we get from that to go towards that production. But we have a preview night this Thursday, and then we're going to open up on the 14th. On Friday.
All right. So you can get tickets for that opening now.
Yeah.
And you can call Cité or go to their website. Mm-hmm. And as we've been saying several times, it's intimate theater. You should reserve your tickets ahead of time.
Yes.
You might be able to get them at the door, but good idea to reserve them. So it runs for 3 weeks, the 13th mm-hmm. through the 30th.
Yes.
Do you have a web presence, Facebook page? Is there any way people can find out more about your production?
We do have a Facebook event page. Mm-hmm. You can just type in Death Trap Cité des Arts. It should come up.
Right.
We have also a Death Trap, deathtrap@gmail.com website if you have any questions or anything like that.
Well, people
or Cité des Arts website. So
they'll have information.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
it's
Cooper, thank you so much for all your work and passion. And we look forward to a long run of the Lauren Riley Elliott Company.
I appreciate it.
Thank
we appreciate it. Thank you very much.